So welcome to Commonwealth Games Month at St Paul's. As you can see, we've had a bit of trouble selling tickets for all the seats, especially if you came to the earlier program. But Ken's still working at McDonald's on the corporate sponsorship, so we're hoping that they'll be taken up. Yes, this month is Commonwealth Games theme at St Paul's, and over the next 4 weeks we're having a series of talks on sporting themes. This week I've been asked to talk on the theme qualifying and competing with a purpose. And next week Ken will talk about training for success, followed by David Aleph on competing in the big event. And then in the grand final, Ken will do winning gold. Naturally, with such a sporting theme at St Paul's this month, we've chosen three of St Paul's most famous and accomplished sports people to give these addresses. I know you're saying, how can three men with so much girth and so little hair be considered sports people? Well, while it's not revealed much these days, in the past, all of us had glorious sporting achievements. For example, during his school years, David was excelled as string changer in the yo-yo squad. And Ken played rugby at school, and the position he played most was left right out. And actually, the only way I got to be in a representative team at school was to volunteer to keep the score sheet. But I did play rugby in the Chermside Methodist team for a couple of seasons. They started out by hiding me away at fullback, but they moved me to second row after a few games in which I excelled at dropping the ball from the opposition kickoff. Had they given a prize for this at the annual awards supper, I would have got the award for the most knock-ons from opposition up and unders. Although I do recall one game as a fullback when I did catch the ball cleanly, and I was so mesmerised with surprise at this achievement that I failed to notice the opposition front rower looming up on me. And now he was about the size of a Toyota Land Cruiser, and he hit me so hard that I was actually surprised that the airbags didn't pop out of the ground to protect me. I reckon they could hear the air rushing out of my lungs 2 blocks away. Well, all this brings me to the first point that I want to make, and that is about qualifying. You know, even if you were a permanent bench member in the seventh basketball team at school, you can still play in God's game. No one is excluded from God's game. Everybody's invited in. In our reading this morning, St. Paul is comparing our Christian life with a sporting competition. And he says, you've all been to the stadium. This is as the reading we just heard is rendered by the Message translation. You've all been to the stadium and seen the athletes race. Everyone runs, one wins. Run to win. All good athletes train hard. They do it for a gold medal that tarnishes and fades. You're after one that's gold eternally. I don't know about you, but I'm running hard for the finish line. I'm giving it everything I've got. No sloppy living for me. I'm staying alert and in top condition. I'm not going to get caught napping, telling everyone else about it, and then missing out myself. Now, when Paul wrote this to the Christians in Corinth, in Greece, we can be certain his readers knew what he was talking about, because Corinth, in those days, was the site of the second most important games competition in the world. And these games were called the Isthmian Games because it was held on the Isthmus of Corinth. If you look at a map of Greece, you'll notice that Greece is almost divided in two by the Mediterranean Sea. The southern landmass is connected to the northern landmass by a little isthmus of land. It's actually only about 10 kilometres wide. On the west side today is the town of Corinthos, which is near where ancient Corinth was, and on the east side is a town called Isthmia. And from about 600 years before Paul wrote this to the Christians in Corinth, they used to hold their games there on the Isthmus of Corinth every 2 years, for 600 years or more. They were called the Isthmian Games. Now, personally, I'm very grateful that the modern Olympic Games are based on the games from the town of Olympia rather than Isthmia. Can you imagine how hard it would be for some Europeans every 4 years to talk about the Isthmian Games? Some of them can't even pronounce synony. Anyway, when Paul spoke to the Corinthians and said, you've all been to the stadium and seen the athletes race, they would have said, oh yeah, Paul, yeah, that's the Isthmian Games. Yeah, we've seen those. They're cool. And they would have already known one important fact about the Games that Paul doesn't need to explain to them, but he refers to it. He says, everyone who competes in the Games goes into strict training. Now, what would have been known to the Corinthians is that although anyone could enter, not everyone qualified for the actual event. You see, it was a condition of entry at the Isthmian Games that the athlete undertook 10 months of compulsory training. 10 months of compulsory training. And if you didn't do the training, you didn't get to race. And Paul's suggesting that we should think about our Christian life in that same way. Yes, you can enter for free. Anyone can sign up. God's grace is free for everyone. You don't have to be Ian Thorpe to enter this race. But free entry brings with it some responsibility. A responsibility to take the Games seriously. Free entry into the grace of God brings with it some responsibility, or so Paul suggests it should. And I think that's the first important thing that Paul wants us to get from what he's saying here. How are we equipping ourselves to live effective Christian lives? Are we in training? Are we doing the hard yards? Just because God can use anything we have doesn't mean we should give him just anything to use. If you'll forgive a little judgmentalism on my part, I do see Christians who think that the whole of Christian life is summed up and completed in one decision. The born-again decision, we sometimes call about it. This one moment of conversion. A decision to accept Jesus Christ as Lord of my life. Friends, this is just the sign-up. It's not life again, it's born again. And after born comes life. This is just the entry form. Christian life only begins at conversion. Christian life only begins when we say, yes, I accept Jesus into my heart. And Paul is saying, okay, you've signed on for the Games. Now, I'd like to see you every Sunday here at 10 o'clock for the training. We'll do 10 laps on Wednesday night, maybe in a life group. And I want you to do 3 laps every morning all by yourself. And we'll need you for group work 3 times a month. It's all right, I got a mic. Just because God can use anything we have doesn't mean we should give him just anything to use. Of course, our unwillingness to put in the training for Christian living is not a modern phenomenon. It's not something that only happens in our time. There's this story told that Jesus took his disciples up the mountain, gathered them around him, and he taught them. And he said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are those who thirst for justice. Blessed are you when persecuted. Blessed are you when you suffer. And then the story goes, then Simon Peter said, do we have to write this down? And Andrew said, are we supposed to know this? And James said, will we have a test on this? And Bartholomew said, do we have to hand anything in? And John said, the other disciples didn't have to learn this. And Matthew said, what does this have to do with real life? Well, it's only a story, but it's a familiar one, isn't it? Do we really have to work hard to understand what it is God wants from us? Do we really have to do the study? Do we really have to be theologians of some sort? It's so much easier to rest on our conversion moment. It's easier than it is to persist in keeping our form good, our bodies fit, our minds alert. But Paul is urging us to do just that, to think of Christian life as athletes. It's a life of constant training. It's not just about signing on. It's not even about getting fit. It's about staying fit. A few weeks ago in this church, Gavin talked to us about ways we might study the Bible. And I confess, I thought I was going to hear same old, same old. I mean, I've been sitting in church most Sundays for almost 60 years now, and I've heard more than one preacher suggest ways I might read the Bible. And I suppose it's some small credit to me that I've tried pretty much all of them. And I've found them useful. But because we're growing and developing human beings, what is useful today may not be useful to you as time goes by. One method does not last a lifetime. Well, if it did, the Scripture Union would only need to publish one kind of Bible study notes. So for a number of years I journaled, which was one of Gavin's suggestions, and I found that a very enriching way to interact with the Bible. And during the time that we lived in Hong Kong, I actually wrote a daily Bible study, or a devotional really, for the staff, which probably bored the staff to death, but it was a wonderful discipline for me. Anyway, back to Gavin. So he's up there suggesting different ways to do daily devotions, and I'm ticking them off. Yeah, Gav, done that one. Yeah, Gav, been there. And then he talks about reading the Bible cover to cover. And I realise I haven't done that. From Genesis 1:1 to Revelation 22:21. I had to look it up because I can never remember what's the last verse. And I realised I'd never done that. Never read the Bible cover to cover. So the next day, I read the first two chapters of Genesis. Well, of course, I'd read them before, probably thousands of times. But pretty soon I was seeing how interesting it is to read the book this way. I began to think about how passages linked one with another, and sometimes how they didn't. How they relate to the whole. What is the meta-language of the Bible that sits above the words and the verses? What is God saying about the whole as much as about the particular? Well, Gavin's a bit ahead of me because I think he's doing the same thing. I'm up to Leviticus now, Gav. Oh, yeah, okay. It's not the funnest book in the Bible, is it, Leviticus? But it's far from uninteresting. So thanks, Gav, for that suggestion. The point I'm making is don't stop the training. Don't stop the training. Let's give God our best. And that means keeping up the training. It means turning up for practice. It means preparing for worship. I don't walk in here this morning without having thought about what I should say. In fact, I've thought about it, prayed about it, written and rewritten for weeks. I know it may not always show, but there you go. Paul says, all the runners run, but only one wins the prize. Run in such a way to get the prize. So if the first thing Paul wants us to understand is that we should be in constant training, the second thing is that we need to have a goal in mind. We need to know where we're going, and we need to run to get that prize. The trouble is that too many people in the world aim at nothing and hit it. And if you don't know where you're going, any road will do. Paul says we ought to be clear about the prize. What the goal of life is. The winner at the Isthmian Games got a laurel wreath to wear on their head. It was made of leaves. And that's what Paul means when he says a crown that will not last. He's thinking of that wreath. It's a literal statement that Paul is making. The crown that the Isthmian athlete won lasted a day or two at most, and then it was dead and gone. But we do it, says Paul, to get a crown that lasts forever. This ought to be our goal, to live so fully within the grace and plan of God that we enjoy God's pleasure and benefits of his kingdom. As the writer James says, blessed is anyone who endures temptation. Such a one has stood the test and will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. And as it said in our reading this morning from Timothy, Paul writes to Timothy and says, I have fought well, I have finished the race, I have been faithful. So a crown will be given to me for pleasing the Lord. He judges fairly, and on the day of judgment he will give a crown to me and to everyone else who wants him to appear with power. Now Paul's talking about what's going to happen when we die, but he's not only talking about that. He's not just talking about pie in the sky when you die. He's talking about the life we live right here and now as well. Judy and I once heard an African-American preacher who preached on the topic, it's not pie in the sky when you die, it's how sound you are on the ground while you're still around. And he was better than me, I tell you. Too many people climb the ladder of success only to reach the top and discover it's leaning against the wrong wall. So let's be clear about what the goal is. And then, as Paul says, don't run like a man running aimlessly. Stay in the lane. Look to the finish tape. Focus. Run straight. A few years ago, I learned to fly a plane out at Lilydale Airport. And after a few lessons, I discovered that flying a plane is really easy. It's landing that's hard. Anyway, they taught me how to take off, and this is really quite easy. Once you've gone through all your checks and you've got the flaps in the right place and all that sort of thing, it's really simple. The method is to get the plane up the Yarra Glen end of the runway, pointing towards Mount Dandenong. And you line the pointy end of the plane right at the TV towers on Mount Dandenong. And then you just pull the engine up to maximum power, let the brakes off, and the plane does the rest. It bounces along the runway, and then the wings produce lift, and it takes off. All you got to do is make sure you keep the nose pointed at those TV towers. I just had to focus. Stay in line, run straight for the goal, and you achieve your prize, which is getting in the air. And after that, you have to do some other things or you crash. But anyway, that's another story. Now, nobody exemplifies this better in their own life than the Apostle Paul, whose writing we've heard in the church today. For years, he was climbing a ladder of success. He was very famous. Before he became a Christian, he was very famous. If he'd been living in the world today, you would have seen him in New Idea every Wednesday and Famous every Monday. Has anyone read Famous yet? You know there's a new magazine out called Famous. Comes out on Monday. So when I pull up to the traffic lights there at Middleborough Road and look across at the front of the newsagent there on Burwood Highway, I see all these pictures for Famous, and they have the most wonderful slogan. It says, "Get Famous Every Monday." That's clever, isn't it? Well, if such magazines had been around in Saul's time, as he was called then he would have been in those magazines because he was a famous dude. He was the famous Christian killer of Asia Minor. But he realized his ladder was leaning against the wrong wall. And all the energy he was putting in was focused on those short-term worldly goals. And when he encountered Jesus on the road to Damascus, he moved his ladder. His goals were transformed, and so was his life. So Paul says, be serious about training. And then he says, run for the eternal prize. And then the third thing he says is, develop self-control. Develop mastery over self. He actually says he beats his body and makes it his slave. And he says this after he's saying that we ought not to box as though beating the air. And there's a little play on words here that's a bit lost in the translation, because Paul is describing the boxer who goes into the ring and can't land a punch. Actually, I had this experience once, only once. The only time in school physical education classes where we actually pulled on the boxing gloves and got in a ring and had a go. I'd never tried boxing before, although I'd landed the occasional punch in the schoolyard. But unfortunately, the guy that I was sparring with had tried boxing before. And every time I threw a punch, he ducked and weaved out of the way. And of course, every time I ducked and weaved, his punch magically seemed to duck and weave after me. Anyway, after two rounds of literally beating the air with these punches, I asked the coach how I was doing, and he said, "Keep going, the breeze might give him a cold." Yeah, it's good, right? So Paul says, don't box like that. Instead, pretty much literally what he says is, punch your body on the chin. And it's an image meant to convey the idea of subduing or taking control of your body. Make your body your slave, he says. Get your body under control. Paul is talking about taking charge of self. Not just your muscles and your limbs. He's talking about taking charge of yourself. He's talking about self-control. The American publishing house Zondervan have published a version of the Bible that they call the Leadership Bible. It's the New International Version that we usually read here in church. But in addition, it's got copious notes and references that are good for people who aspire to leadership. And commenting on this passage, the Leadership Bible says, and I'll quote, "Paul trained for his daily spiritual journey like a world-class athlete." Why? Because he wanted to have the self-control to finish the race without being disqualified. We need to cultivate this same kind of spiritual fitness. If you want to be an effective person, identify the habits you need to build into your life so that you can live with diligence. Habits such as physical fitness, balance between work and home, financial and personal accountability, proactivity in the workplace. Strap on your shoes and get going. Disciplined habits will give you the momentum you need not only to move forward, but also to run your earthly race with strength and purpose. Well, I think we could do worse than look to the life and example of St. Paul. He was an amazing man who disciplined his life so magnificently that he became a champion of God. God gave Paul the power to become this champion, and God can give us the same power. As Paul writes to his young disciple Timothy, God doesn't give us a spirit of cowardice, but rather a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline. So what is self-discipline, self-control? Well, I think it's the quality that allows a person to do what needs to be done when he or she doesn't feel like doing it. The quality that allows a person to do what needs to be done when he or she doesn't feel like doing it. Dr. Henry Cloud is a psychiatrist, and he tells the story of one patient whom he calls Sarah. Sarah had been in therapy because of conflicts in her life between herself and her parents, her husband and her children. And one day she said to Dr. Cloud, "I haven't told you about this relationship before, though I guess I should have. I have tremendous problems with this one woman. She eats too much, and she has an attacking tongue. She's unreliable, lets me down all the time, and she's spent money of mine and hasn't paid me back in years." Dr. Cloud asked, "Why haven't you mentioned her before?" And Sarah replied, "Because she's me." Self-control begins in recognizing our own limitations. And then, after that, it's about committing ourselves to begin to work on them. Actually, when I wrote that first, I wrote committing ourselves to overcome our limitations. And then I realized that there are some things within each and every one of us that aren't that easy to deal with. Some things require much prayer, they require help from others, and they require a lifetime of constant and diligent effort. Some things you can't overcome, you have to learn to control. But many things are easier to get control of than those really deep problems that I'm referring to there. And many things we can get control of. Instead of saying the devil made me do it, we might need to be ready to admit that sometimes we did it ourselves. For instance, anyone can learn to be better at time management, I reckon. Poor listeners can learn to talk less and listen more. Shy folk can discover ways to be more assertive. There are lots of ways that we could get control of ourselves. And this is what self-control is, getting mastery over oneself in order to be equipped to fully live within God's grace. The reason this is so important is that really self-control is the only kind of control a person can really have. I know some people think that they can control others, but that's not control, that's influence. That's a different idea. You can influence another person's reactions, you can influence their choices, but that other person still has the choice, ultimately, of whether or not they want to respond to you and how they'll respond to you. So if one is refusing to control oneself and at the same time trying to control others, you're just wasting your time. Now, self-control is a big topic. It's big enough for a month of Sunday sermons. And Paul writes a lot about self-control. He says the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. Paul may not have had a degree in psychology, but he understands the human condition well enough without it. And self-control is a key to living the kind of life that is good and godly. Daniel Goleman is the author of the book Emotional Intelligence. I'm sure some of you have read that, especially if you're in business. He spends his time analysing why some leaders develop to their fullest potential and why most don't. Most leaders actually hit a plateau that's well below their capability. And he asks, why is that? And his conclusion is that the difference is, maybe you've guessed it, self-control. He calls it emotional self-control. What characterises maximised leadership potential, according to Goleman? And the answer is tenaciously staying in leadership despite overwhelming opposition or discouragement. Staying in the leadership game and maintaining sober-mindedness during times of crisis. Keeping ego at bay. Staying focused on the mission instead of being distracted by someone else's agenda. All these indicate high levels of emotional self-control. And Goleman says, exceptional leaders distinguish themselves because of superior self-control. Well, Daniel Goleman is obviously smart, but you could have got that by reading St. Paul. So in summary, first, be serious about training. Get fit for Christian service and stay fit. Second, be clear about the prize. Discover God's unfolding plan for your life and focus on it. Third, get control of yourself. Here's a little devotional from Christian author Max Lucado. Perhaps you'd like to pray it with me. It's quiet. It's early. My coffee is hot. The sky is still black. The world is still asleep. The day is coming. In a few moments, the day will arrive. It will roar down the track with the rising of the sun. The stillness of the dawn will be exchanged for the noise of the day. The calm solitude will be replaced by the pounding pace of the human race. The refuge of the early morning will be invaded by decisions to be made and deadlines to be met. For the next 12 hours, I will be exposed to the day's demands. It is now that I must make a choice. Because of Calvary, I'm free to choose, and so I choose self-control. I am a spiritual being. After this body is dead, my spirit will soar. I refuse to let what will rot rule the eternal. I choose self-control. I will be drunk only by joy. I will be impassioned only by my faith. I will be influenced only by God. I will be taught only by Christ. I choose self-control, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Amen.